Hello, everybody. This is Bruce Lee, and welcome to Your Better Self with international speaker Ken Wallace. Today is July 28th, and we have, I think it's going to be a fascinating 60-minute introspection of you and your success. Let me talk about Ken a little bit, actually, after I get through the introductions. As you know, this is being recorded and will be available for almost immediate replay, download, upload after the presentation. If you enjoy the presentation, please forward the link on to your friends. There will be a special offer by Ken at the end that you will probably want to take advantage of and let others know as well. In addition to that, if at any point in time during the session a question strikes your mind you might want to ask Ken and get an answer on it, just click on the link on the left of the page, submit the question when the window pops up, and if we can get to it during the call, we will. Otherwise, as long as your email address is there or if you put a phone number in, I will make sure Ken gets that, and he will contact you about that after. So with that, this is being recorded. Let me tell you a little bit about Ken. I've known him for, Ken is at 12, 15 years now. It's been a long time. We met at a National Speakers Association convention. You've been at one of our conferences. We've done a lot of work before. Ken Wallace is a professional speaker, consultant, and executive coach specializing in personal and organizational development. He helps people and organizations do better than their best, hence the book. He's also an ordained United Methodist minister. For the past 18 years, he has spoken and consulted in various industries, helping his clients improve their performance, productivity, and profitability. Since 2000, Ken has been one of only 9 certified business and process system coaches for General Motors. They certainly need his help these days. Ken is a contributing author to Mentoring the Most Obvious Yet Overlooked Key to Achieving More in Life Than You Ever Dreamed Possible, and How to Manage $1 Million or Less. A professional member of the National Speakers Association since 1989, he's also a member of the International Federation for Professional Speaking. The book is about what do you want most in life, as you saw from the write-up. So be it happiness, fame, wealth, power, recognition, peace of mind, whatever it is. This book is about helping you achieve more than you ever thought you could, about having more than you ever thought you should, help you become and remain your better self. With that, please welcome Ken Wallace. Ken, take it away.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity. It's always good to talk with you, Bruce, because you always enlighten me on something or other just in our informal chats from time to time. And I thank you for being a part of this webinar.
My pleasure, and I'm looking forward to it, and I'm sure our audience is too.
So the topic, Your Better Self, I start off with the question, why your better self and not your best self? Because a lot of times people will think, well, you know, better is not your best, and most of the time the motto seems to be, generally speaking, as well, I tried my best, or I did my best, or all I expect of you is your best. But when I got to thinking about that, and from my own experience, what it is that I was trying to do whenever I tried to do something, and I said, well, I did my best, I really wound up using that phrase, I did my best, as an excuse for not doing any better. And the more deeply I thought about it, that whole notion of best really presumes an upper limit to your personal capabilities. As you strive to do something in life, whatever it happens to be, hopefully it's what you want and not what somebody else wants you to do for them. But out of your own personal aspirations, as you strive to do your best, sometimes that then becomes a limit and you wind up not doing any better. And when you run out of gas, run out of steam, run out of desire to accomplish something, then you wind up saying, well, I did my best. And the problem is your best isn't good enough to get the job done. Now what do you do? So that's really the purpose of this book, is to explore how it is that your resources inside yourself can be brought to bear at will on any given occasion under any set of circumstances to help you exceed what you think your personal best is. In other words, to do better than your best.
You know, if I can just add, I think totally agreeing with you when somebody says, ask you how you did, you think, well, I did my best. If they were to say to you, really, and if you'd really be honest with yourself, no, it was as good as I could do at the time. but what is your best? And I know this is where your book is going to go, as to figuring out, you know, how you can be better than you have been before, and so that you know it, you know, as compared to having that limiting belief. And I think you're right on with that. So let's get on to it. So the next slide is talking about inner limit negativity versus outer life. Do you want to talk about that a little bit more?
Yes. Given the fact that whatever you believe your best is really just a self-imposed restriction on what you think you can achieve, that then sets your internal limits, and it impacts what it is that you're able to accomplish with whatever external efforts that you apply. And let me ask, actually, that question is not something that I can answer for everybody. I can only answer it for myself, and individuals can only answer it for themselves. And this question will help you identify what those outer limits in your life are that are caused by the inner limit of what you think your best is, and you're just stopping there, and you're not wanting to go any further. And that question is that you need to ask yourself is, what do you want most that you aren't experiencing now? And you've got to really identify what it is that you really want. You've got to have, as the saying goes, you really got to wanna. And what that is that you really want in your life, if it's not there now and you don't feel that you're moving steadily toward accomplishing that, then why that is that it's that inner limit that you're placing on yourself that you think you can't exceed. That's your inner limit. That's what you would really, and I would call, your best. So how do you get beyond that? And I guess the best way to do that, or the first step, is to identify how your best gets set, how that inner limit inside your mind and in your heart gets set. The first thing that happens is that you get socialized. And what I mean by that is you get brought up. You get established in a particular vein of thought, a certain train of thought. You're brought up by your folks, and they have their certain biases. They have their certain opinions. There's nothing wrong with that. It's just that we get socialized into a particular culture and a particular way of thinking that we have a hard time getting out of later on in life, and it becomes restrictive in many cases, and it prevents us from going beyond where we have been before. So I think possibly one of the differences, I've been raised in Middle America, and that outlook on life is perhaps more conservative than a lot of other parts of America. I'm not sure, but I do have a certain kind of bias. And when I think in terms of how American approaches life and views life compared to Canadians, I see that there is a difference. And it's not that we're locked in. We can be. But that then becomes the way that we tend to look at our future. And another way is the conditioning. We are conditioned in our thinking because, well, we just keep thinking the same thing. And if you keep thinking the same thing over and over again, it becomes the way, a pattern of thought. And that really is what causes us to limit ourselves, just thinking the same thing over and over again. You know what I mean, Bruce?
Oh, yeah. In fact, I was thinking when you're starting to talk about that, it reminds me that, you know, the conditioning, the socialization comes from, you know, the message we're told when we're young by our parents or people we respect. So, you know, whoever the authoritative person is, you know, a family, friend, whatever, where they say, you know, too young, money doesn't grow on trees, we just don't do that, we can't do that, we can't afford that. That all of a sudden becomes that conditioning, which becomes, well, I guess I can't, shouldn't, won't, no, I'm not even going to try. And that really sets your lower limit as compared to what the higher limit is when people go, you can do it, let's try, let's go do this.
That's right. The conditioning is just that habit of thought. That next one, it says habituation. One of the things in my book is, one of the examples is trying a little experiment with drawing on a blank piece of paper with, say, a marble. I would use a marble, and you just scratch along the same line in the same direction two or three times along a blank piece of paper with that marble, and then put that marble at one end of that line, that invisible line, and then tap it in that direction, and you'll see that it will follow that line, even though it's only been scratched in there just two or three times. So we tend to set the trough, if you will, or the rut of our thinking early on in life, and it progresses along that line into the future, and then that limits what we think is possible in our lives.
And almost and becomes then when self-conscious. People do,
sorry?
Subconscious. Almost becomes a subconscious way of acting.
It does. Yeah, it does kind of settle into the way that you see yourself, and that then becomes a pattern of thought, habit of thought, that extends into the future. In other words, you predict your future pretty much by some of the things that you've done in the past, unless you make that choice to break free from it. And we'll talk about that in just a few moments. Misunderstandings is another way that this concept of our best gets set in our lives, in our minds, our heads. I have a story about having gone to into the seventh grade, and the teacher was known as a very strict disciplinarian. His name was Mr. Horst. And everybody in the town of Carbondale, where I still happen to live, who was in the summer of their sixth grade year, getting ready to go into the seventh grade year, prayed the same prayer, and that was, please, dear God, don't let me get Mr. Horst as my seventh grade teacher. Because we heard he killed kids in his class. And but God, in his infinite wisdom, saw fit that I should get Mr. Horst as my seventh grade teacher. And it took me a couple of months, really, to get used to him and get over my fear of him, that he would, in fact, kill me or at least torture me at some point. And I realized that, you know, I could flourish under his approach. But one time I was so comfortable doing what he had assigned in class. I was sitting at the table or at the desk there, and we were all quiet, supposed to be quiet, working on our own. And I got so into it, I began to whistle. And I didn't know what I was doing. I was not aware that perhaps what I was doing was disruptive to the class. And concentrating so much, I was whistling away. I didn't see Mr. Horst stand up from behind his desk and walk all the way around the side and all the way around the back, which is where I was seated. And then all of a sudden, I became aware of this looming presence behind me. And I turned and looked up, and there he was, finishing writing the dreaded white slip. And what that meant was that I'd have to stay after school. It was a detention slip. And he had written a whole bunch of this. And then as he was tearing it off a stack and letting it float to my desk, he said, reason? There's no whistling in my class. And all of a sudden, I felt terrible about who I was and where I was, what I was doing. And I didn't learn much that day. That night, I hardly slept. And then the next morning, when we got together, and right after the bell had rung, he held up a whole bunch of white slips he'd written the day before. And he tore them in two and threw them in the wastebasket next to his desk. And he said, reason? My ulcers were bothering me. Well, I didn't know what that meant, but I sensed, based on my growing respect for Mr. Horst, that something important had just been said. And you've heard the phrase that when the student is ready, the teacher will appear.
Yes.
Well, it was about 25 years later that I was, as a student, ready to be a student again of Mr. Horst, when I realized the profound nature of the lesson that he gave to us that particular day in class. And that was that not everything that's said to you about you is true about you. And that got me to thinking that there's a lot in our lives when it comes to setting the boundaries or the limitations of what we think is possible that are based on misunderstandings from other people saying something about us that just isn't true. It isn't true then, perhaps, maybe it was to some degree, but it's certainly not true now. But we've repeated that in our lines, just like drawing that marble, that line on a clean piece of paper, and it just set the track of our thinking along the same lines, and we kept repeating that about us to us, and it became true about us when, in fact, it really never was. So we have to realize that a lot of times what we think is our best is based on misunderstandings of other people's observations about us and comments about what they think about us. It has more to do with them than it does with us.
Yeah, and if I can just add, a great part of your story is the fact that the next day he corrected the hurt from the day before. Had he not done that, you know, as has been said, is that what we say about somebody affects us not only short-term but long-term. And what you were saying, you know, the realization was that you didn't know what was wrong and some other things is that could have impacted you long, long, long after that, forever, had he not been man enough, big enough to correct the next day, which then led to that aha, you know, later. But that's a great example of stifling, you know, child creativity and enjoyment for the wrong reason. You know, how it was handled was poor. That's a great story.
Well, that's a major part or a point in the book, and that is that we have to subject our thinking, think about our thinking, as to what was, you know, what direction it has been set in and why we continue on in that direction, that even now our self-concept may be based on some kind of a misunderstanding that we have yet to become aware of. I became aware of because of, like what you just said, Mr. Horst, having said that, and then in my memory later becoming aware of it. But some of us, and maybe myself too, there's some things happening that, you know, I don't know what. I need to start thinking about it is my point.
Oh, sure.
About those misunderstandings.
Yeah. So if I was to sum up this slide for us, this is about we become victim of our environment, victim of our upbringing, and what you're talking about is how to become a victor over that, you know, to make an accomplishment.
That's true. We can become constrained or we can become free from it, and really it's becoming your better self is becoming consciously free. Now, it's not like denying all of this. And it's not saying it's all bad. It's just saying I recognize it. I've become aware of it. Now I can use that as a momentum into a different future than otherwise this would predict for me.
Yeah, that self-awareness. All right, so I move forward to the next slide, which leads to what can we do today that will help you immediately exceed your best and get what you really want?
A couple of things. There are several things identified in the book, but the primary basis is first to identify your worthy aspirations. Worthy aspirations are those aspirations. It's a yearning. It's not just a sense of boy, I'd really like to do that, but it's a deep, soulful yearning to experience something better, more fulfilling in your life. And worthy aspirations are always an improvement that results in something better, not just for yourself, but for others. When you can aspire to a lot of different things that are only good for you or that only benefit you, but worthy aspirations, there's a social component. There's a nature of the and this is peppered throughout the book, that we can't do this on our own. We are part of a whole, and if we are not an active part of it or a healthy part of it, then the whole suffers as well. But that we can't become any better without help from other people, without input from other people to other people.
By expanding our network of people, we learn more, grow more, find out the resources that are there. And what's really interesting, and I think you talk about this in one of the chapters, is that when you ask for what you want, you get it. So just utilizing the power of your network of people, assuming you ask for the right things.
That's right, and what you ask for, you look to receive, and you can only ask really of other people what you feel you need from them in order to help you manifest your worthy aspirations. But it is, if it's only for yourself, then it's not a worthy aspiration. So in order to exceed your best and get what you really want, you've got to focus on what you really want to do. And that's that next one, gauge the health of your desire. Healthy desire is something that it's purifying in the sense that it drives you toward taking that first step and that next step and all of the succeeding steps to actually get what you want, because you know that it is a worthy aspiration that's going to benefit you and others. You can have what I'd call unhealthy desire, in that we have these little things that happen to us that seek to divert us and dilute our desire from pursuing our worthy manifestations. Those are the little things like sitting at your desk and working on the project and then having a little mental block, which we all do at times, not knowing where to go or feeling anxious about taking that next step or thinking that next thought or whatever it is. And then, there's a computer game here that I can do that probably I should do just to take my mind off of this problem that I'm experiencing, this blockage. And so you get easily diverted to things that are not a productive use of your time. And so your desire is really to become rather than on task when it comes to manifesting your worthy aspirations. So you've got to gauge the health of your desire. Do you really want what you say you want? Or is it merely mimicking what other people want for you?
Yeah.
And that goes back to what we said earlier about this whole channel of thinking and the socialization and the conditioning and the habit of thought that is going to predict a certain future that if it's not satisfying now, it's certainly not going to be satisfying in the future.
Sure. You know, what comes to mind when you say that is when I'm working with some of my coaching clients or I'm doing strategic planning sessions, what I try to identify, the worthy aspiration, I just call it the prize. And the prize is, the ultimate destination, which can be vision and a number of other things. But say, what do you really want? And what is it going to look like? And how is it going to affect you? How is it going to feel? And those are just some of the questions I get. When I get people really excited about really identifying, nailing down what that destination, that prize is going to be, they get quite excited. Now, to support the worthy part of it, what I like to think is that when you become successful, that gives you the opportunity to do what you want, but also gives you opportunity to give back. Because I think we're here to make a difference. And that goes back to now maybe I'm just ingrained, habitualized, socialized from my Boy Scout days, leave the camp place a better place than you found it, or my junior chamber of commerce days, build a better world, build a better person, build a better world. But I'm just, my commitment is to help others get to be the best they can be, whatever that takes, to raise the vision, to raise the aspiration, to raise the excitement level about what they do, and certainly your book gets into some really great examples of that.
Yeah, there are some techniques as well. I mean, obviously we've been talking about kind of philosophical grounding and kind of a concept of what it is to be imprisoned by yourself in your mind and in your habits of thought, and then how to break free from those is really a primary thrust of the book. But there are some techniques as well that I pepper throughout. For instance, one thing as far as helping you to identify your desire and how healthy it is called the One Thing Clearly method. One Thing Clearly. A lot of times when you're thinking about what you want, regardless of whether it's on task or off task, healthy desire or unhealthy desire, you start thinking overwhelmingly about a number of things, or you become overwhelmed by a number of thoughts, and you don't know how to start or how to sort things out, how to prioritize those thoughts. Of course, those thoughts lead to feelings, and sometimes you get a sense of, well, I just don't want to take any step now because I don't know which one to take. So the one thing clearly method helps you sort through the clutter of those thoughts and feelings when it comes to determining what you really want and the nature and the health of your desire. There's five steps I'll go over briefly. Again, on that sheet of paper, that clean sheet of paper, just like you would be doing in your brain, etching a certain kind of thought that will eventually become a habit for you. You're choosing the thought now rather than letting it default from your past and all those conditionings and socialization. But you write on that piece of paper one action step you're going to take that's going to help you fire up your desire, or at least focus it, and tie that into what you say you want. A lot of people say, I want this, I want that. But they don't have the desire to really take that first step to actually get it done. So write down that one action step you're going to take that's going to fire up your desire so that you can take that first step. And the next one is to write when you're going to do it. Simple goal setting here. By when are you going to take that step? And then the third one is to list those, and this is part of the community aspect of you can't do any better than your best without input and help from others. So the third step here in the One Thing Clearly method is list those, if there are any, whose help you're going to need to boldly take that next step, that first step that you've written down in the second part of this. And then give them a copy of this completed sheet of yours. This is what I want. This is what I say I want. This is what I'm going to do, one step. And these are the people I need to have some help from in order to do it, and I'm going to share this with them. Fourth step in this One Thing Clearly method is to write one sentence, and this gets back to what you're saying, Bruce, about identifying what it's going to look like and feel like. Is what is it going to look like, what's it going to feel like to you and to others when you've accomplished that one action step to fire up your desire to do what you say you want to do? What's it going to look like, what's it going to feel like after you've done it? And then the fifth and final step of the One Thing Clearly method is to call these people that you've shared this with and whose help you've asked to help you do this, and tell them what happened. Not only what happened if it did happen, but why you think it didn't happen if it didn't. So now you've got this kind of virtuous relationship, virtuous cycle of feedback and input from others to help you identify what to do to improve that clear idea, clearly defined notion of that first step in order to really get things moving. Because once you start, you don't remain in your brain, is what I'm saying. Once you get your body in motion, your brain will find reasons to keep your body in motion along the same line.
I like that, because what you're doing is when you're going public, you're getting feedback. And, of course, when you go public, when you say what you're going to do, you're going to know from hearing it whether or not it's doable or not. And the feedback from your friends, and hopefully you're talking to the right friends, the ones that are supportive, caring, nurturing, that are going to say, yeah, you should do that. Now, I just want to support that with a couple of quick ideas. An acronym I have for what you just talked about is called, I'll just give the acronym, it's TFAR, if you want to do T/F/A/R. So, and it's exactly what you talked about. It's what you think about. So the thoughts lead to feelings, and what you're saying, Ken, which is so true, is when we get to the feeling, and if it's a negative feeling, go, well, what's the use? I don't have the skills, resources, time, management, whatever, so I'm not going to do anything. But it's when you get to the feelings that you want to step past that to the action, because what you said was the action creates the results. But most people get stuck in the feeling. So just to support that. And then to add the fifth thing you talked about, going public with with your announcement of what your intent is, what your aspiration is, you're going to get all sorts of great feedback, especially if you say, what do you think? What should I know? Give me your experience, or, especially when you ask people for help. And the last thing, just to support that, is if people have trouble figuring out what their priorities are, so what they really need to do, if you go to my website, which everybody has, and you go to teleseminars, webinars, replays, there's one called How to Get Control of Your Daily Life and Career, which gives you access to the templates for figuring that out and understanding the importance behind time. Because I'm sure you support this, is you have all the goals you want, all the objectives and aspirations, but you need to really figure out priorities to really stay on track. Because if you don't focus on what you want to do, life is going to catch up to you and get you distracted. And that's why can be so important for you figuring out what you want to end up as.
Correct. I agree. I do support that. That's we're singing in the same choir here, Bruce. That's good.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to also proceed. We had in answering this question on this current slide, they offer the reward, they meaning your worthy aspirations, they offer that reward for your commitment. Now, anytime you see in the English language COM or CON, this is going to come into play a few moments. Let's go back a little bit. That slide there, that earlier slide.
The aspiration. It's there.
This one right here. That's right. Where it says commitment, they offer the reward for your commitment. Anytime you see an English word that starts with commitment, and we're going to talk a little bit about confidence here in a few moments, the C-O-N, C-O-M, that prefix has to do with, like, community and confidence or confiding, and all of those C-O-M words, C-O-N words have to do with you can't do it alone. It's all done, that word, whatever the meaning of the word is, in this case commitment, can only be done within a communal or societal or a group setting. The commitment that you have as an individual to proceed along whatever it is in the way of action steps and certain kinds of thinking patterns that will help you manifest your worthy aspirations, you can't do it on your own. Your commitment has to be supported and grow out of your relationships with other people, especially the people in your immediate proximity, your family and your work and so on. So whatever your commitment is to proceeding and manifesting your worthy aspirations, this is going to have to be bolstered by and arise out of your relationships with other people. So that input, like I was mentioning, has to precede any of your commitments to taking steps to becoming better than your best, doing better than your best, manifesting your worthy aspirations, even identifying what they are. Because if they're not worthy of your time and effort and focus, then you'll not do it. You just won't take any step at all to manifest them. But like I said, they are yearnings of the soul to experience a better life, a more fulfilled life. And you just need to think about those.
And if you just want to add something about your family to that, Ken, because certainly you can have your goals, but I think you need to be aware that your family, they have to be a part of that, that they have to support that. And I guess the question would be, well, how do you get their commitment to that or their support of that? I think that would be a key part of that self-development of having the family there too.
That's true. We're going to talk about courage and what it takes. So William James thought that courage was not the opposite of cowardice, but the opposite of conformity. Mm-hmm. And when you have an overwhelming need, and I make the distinction between being absorbed with yourself, there's a self-concern that prevents your better self from arising. Your better self always has to do with your concern about others, primarily, prior to concern for yourself. When you get bogged down in self-concern, then all you're doing is conforming to what other people expect of you. You're always thinking about what others think of you, and whether and trying to manipulate that so that your behavior conforms to what they expect, so that you'll get from them what you think you want, which is their approval. And so this conformity, it doesn't take a lot of courage to conform. It takes courage not to, and to go beyond that, and then to request of them that they see more in you than they do now, or they see more in you, that which you see in you now, that is beyond what they have expected of you up to this point. So you've got to break free from that, and that's really what it is that you need to request of your family and of your friends, to say, I am exploring to go beyond what I think I can do, what I've always thought I was capable of doing and worthy of doing and having in my life, and I need your support. Will you help me, or at least let me go? I don't want to conform anymore to what I used to be. I want to expand beyond that. And one of the chapters I have is being blessed by the right people. Historically, there's, you look through scripture, Christian, Judeo-Christian scripture, you look through other kinds of religious and historical documents, and what people are striving to do, especially those who have accomplished great things that we now read about. Those are the people who have sought being the blessing of the significant people in their lives. And when they received it, it exploded them into a new reality where they could do better than their best, what they previously thought they could do. Here's my story about that. The last conversation I had with my father 21 years ago was my aspiration to become a professional speaker. And I really didn't know too much about that, but about the profession. And I had already established myself in a profession, in the United Methodist Ministry, and I wanted to go beyond that. And I talked with him about that. He looked at me. He didn't say a word. He didn't interrupt me. And then after about 10 minutes of me telling him what I really wanted to do, or felt I wanted to do, I thought, well, he was going to tell me, Ken, you just don't know much about the world. You just don't know much about real life. Because he was a pragmatic person, very practically oriented. And he didn't respond that way. He said, go for it. Ken, go for it. And I've been going for it ever since. But that was my way of seeking his blessing, someone I respected, someone I've learned a lot from, in saying, you know, Ken, I see that you can do that. I see that in you. He didn't say those words, but when he said, go for it, it was his blessing. It's like pulling a trigger on a starting pistol. And I exploded off the finish, off of the beginning line, you know, really fast after that. So, yeah. Yes, family is important, and that's how I got my blessing. That's how I got beyond my best at the time.
I see some similarities between being a minister and being a speaker. As a minister, you inspire people for the next week, you know, and as a speaker, you inspire people, hopefully, for the rest of their lives. And the difference is, instead of getting a sitting ovation, you get a standing ovation.
Oh, no, every Sunday I preach. Every Sunday I preach, they're on their feet, let me tell you.
Okay, all right.
Well,
okay, so we're on the next slide.
Yes.
How to develop healthy desire.
And
I think we may have talked about that, but just a little bit more.
We have, yeah. You've got to listen to your own voice. There's a lot that seeks to distract you. You use the word distraction. Very good. I agree with that. I use the computer game kind of thing. It distracts you. It's not a healthy desire. It's a desire, really, that takes you off your task of pursuing. And I'm not saying that you shouldn't somehow reward yourself for accomplishing your goals, or that you shouldn't take breaks or anything of that sort. I talk specifically about that in some of my chapters, about how to stay on task and then how to get off task so that you're refreshed to get back on them. But When you listen to your own voice, it gives you direction regarding what you need to do at that particular time. And that takes a stillness. It takes a willingness to not rush. One of my chapters is The Tragedy of Goal Rush. Goal Rush. Where we just get all caught up in setting goals, not only setting them, but trying to pursue them and setting the task and these steps that I've talked about, you know, and we get so focused on that, we want to rush through them, and we fail to pause to remain in or to get into a different kind of reality in our souls, and we fail to hear our own voice. So we have to listen to our own voice, and that takes some silence. And that, believe me, you get very clear when you give yourself enough time to listen to your own voice. Get very clear about your desires and how healthy they are. That second bullet point is think about your thinking. I've mentioned that before, but the stay, start, stop is, well, all right, what am I thinking now? What's caused it to channel in this particular way? Is it a trough? Is it a rut? Can I break out of it? And essentially, you need to ask yourself, what thoughts do I need to stay with? What thoughts do I need to start thinking that I haven't thought? And what thoughts do I need to stop altogether because they're just doing me no good and they're not getting me any closer to my worthy aspirations?
If I could just add to that, what I'm enjoying about this is the affirmations I'm getting. When I see the point that says listen to your own voice, a lot of times, you know, based on previous experience, our voice will be negative. We haven't done that before. What are you, stupid? Why do you want to do this? You know, people are going to say, no, you can't do that. You've never done that before. So I kind of go, well, know what you want by knowing what you don't want. You know, so when you're saying be still and really listen to your voice, that is so critical because you got to go, okay, here's what I'm hearing, but what I really want out of it. So if it's a negative, you want to go, well, it's telling me to be cautionary. Well, maybe I need to do some more research. Maybe I need to talk to more people. So your voice is going to be coming up with all the reasons why you can't do it, which can then become the action to do it.
That's right. As a matter of fact, I've mentioned that, you know, you do have negative role models that will inevitably, like in your family, maybe my father said to me, Ken, you know, you can never do that. You know, you just don't get beyond your raising.
I'm going to prove you wrong, Dad.
Yeah, that's right. Now you get a negative. But he pulled the pistol on the trigger on the pistol, starting pistol for me.
Yeah.
But it can be the other way. You're right. You're exactly right. When you listen to your own voice regarding healthy desire, you're going to find out what it is that you really want. But you got to take the time to do that.
Yep. So we need to move on to the next slide because we've got 15 minutes left.
All righty then.
So I'm showing what is your biggest obstacle in being your better self. And maybe we've already covered that, and I should go to the next one.
It's your concern about what others think of you. And let me just, before we move on to the next slide, ask a question of everybody on the line. How often do you think other people really think about you? And my point is not as often as you think.
Yeah.
So get beyond yourself, because this is, you're being bogged down in self-concern when you are concerned about what others think of you. You can get beyond that. This stifles your better self. Let's move on to the next slide there.
Okay, so it says, what does give up giving mean?
Well, one of the chapters that I have is give up giving. And again, we get bogged down in self-concern and why it is that we do what we do and what do we get out of doing what we do. What's our personal payback and payoff? And it's like the Boy Scout that ushers the woman across the street because he's fulfilling his motto or his oath to do a good turn, do a good deed every day. And at the other side, on the other side of the street, the woman says, I didn't want to cross the street. Well, he's doing it out of his own need to give, his own need to do something of value that he considers to be valuable. Shel Silverstein has a poem called Agatha Fry, I think. I can't quote all of it, but the last couple of phrases are, it's about somebody coming in and helping build something, and then somebody coming in, and as they're playing with that toy that was built by everybody, he breaks it. And then the last phrases are, now some kind of help is the kind of help that helping's all about, and other kind of help is the kind of help that we all can do without. And this giving is, we all have a certain need, maybe a selfish need to give, because it gives us a good feeling and a reward for being a good person. But that's not always the kind of help that other people really need. And when we get past our selfish need to give and we give up that notion, then we truly give what's needed by both the other person and ourself, because our self is now out of the way and our better self comes to provide the gift.
Yeah.
So this takes you out of yourself, out of the equation, so your better self can emerge.
So,
and it does.
Next slide. Yeah, fabulous. So we're talking about three effective methods.
Three effective methods for doing better than your best at anything you try. Stop rushing, start thinking. We talked about goal rushing. And also, toward the end of the book, talk about practice the reality you want to live in. First of all, you've got to create the reality you want to live in. Then you've got to practice it, because practice makes perfect. But the German phrase, Übung macht den Meister, which is the practice makes the master. Now, I talk about self-mastery and how what you practice you become master of, and what you need to do is master yourself, and that is your better self, self-mastery. But you can only get to that when you stop and you're still, you listen to your own voice, you stop rushing, and you start thinking. And you start thinking about how it is that you're thinking now and what's causing that, those misunderstandings from the past, those conditionings and so on. You can break free. You have the power to be your better self, and that is your power of choice when it comes to what you think. The second one is, let others help you see how you can be your better self. And a story there is about my grandfather Stafford, who my grandmother Stafford was inflicted by, I guess it was Alzheimer's, some kind of dementia. And over the last 12 years of their marriage, he took care of her as best as he could for the first 3 years of her dementia. And then she got belligerent, and he couldn't care for her at home anymore. She'd lock him out of the house or run out of the house. And then, of course, she was belligerent toward him, so he had to put her in a nursing home about 6 miles away. Every day he drove there and had lunch with her and spent most of the day with her. And the only days that he didn't make it is when the snow was so deep he couldn't shovel it out of the driveway, or when he was so sick he couldn't get out of bed. But he went every day for, I guess it was 10 years or so, maybe it was 12 years. And somebody asked him one time, said, you know, why don't you take a break sometime? She doesn't know who you are. She forgot him. She forgot me. She forgot how to talk. And he said to that person, he said, you know, she probably doesn't know who she is. She doesn't know who I am, but I know who I am. And I'm the same man who said that I would love her through thick and thin, in health, and until death do us part. And that made a real big impression on me. She died before he did. He died before she did, and that was the way it should be, because I think he would have been brokenhearted even, because I remember him saying, I love her more than I now than I did when I said I do. Mm. And that was his better self that showed me how I could be my better self. And that's one of my worthy aspirations, is to be that kind of person, treat my wife and my significant others, the people in my life, to the same degree of respect and and devotion as my grandfather treated my grandmother.
You know, another way of looking at that, Ken, is that's a great story, is that that's about commitment, and commitment speaks a lot about your character.
That's right, and that's who your better self is. It's but again, it's this community effort. Grandpa showed me how I could be my better self. The third one there is, am I being the real me right now? Not too long ago, Kenny Wallace, who is a NASCAR race car driver, some of you may know who he is, others may not, but he recently got a Facebook. He went on Facebook. I've been on Facebook for a couple of years now, and all of a sudden I got all of these requests for to be a friend. You know, hey, be my friend, be my friend, be my friend. And for 2 years before, I had maybe one or two, the whole 2 or 3 years that I was on. And then all of a sudden, I got dozens and dozens, be my friend. Well, that's because this Kenny Wallace came online. And I didn't know any of these people, so I denied them all. I just said, no, I don't know who you are. So one person wrote back and said, is this the real Kenny Wallace? And that got me to thinking, you know, I am for me and for my people, my friends, my community, but not for that person or for these people. I wasn't the real person. But you got to ask yourself, am I being the real me right now? And if you are, you'll find a way to go beyond your self-imposed limitations and go beyond what you think your best is. Let's go on to that next slide, because I think it has to do with confidence.
Can you act with increasing confidence and poise?
Yep, there's four steps there, and that's simply count. I mean, it's very simple stuff, but it really works. You don't have to count to 10 because it'll give you an emotional distance on what it is that you're dealing with as far as a negative reaction from somebody else or a negative set of circumstances. Smile. It's remarkable that when your body changes in some way, it finds a way to continue to maintain and increase that change. So when you smile, you get a different perspective on your circumstances. It's just that simple, even if you don't have anything to smile about. Ask what's good about it. Again, that's you're redirecting your thinking in a more positive way, and what you're the questions you ask are the answers you're going to try to find. And when you breathe, and again, you get emotional distance and control over the situation. And again, that confidence is with other people. That my chapter on confidence has to do with how you really can't have it unless you've got other people involved in helping you create it. It's like the boy, the father stops by the boy struggling with a rock, trying to move it, and he says, son, have you used all of your strength in trying to move that rock? And he says, yes, father, I have. And he says, you have not, because you have yet to ask me to help.
Yeah, that's good.
Okay, let's move on. We've got a
we
couple
are.
More.
How can you live in peace, even in the midst of doubt, distress, and chaos?
Well, concentrate on attitude, focus on gratitude, because your best attitude, I've got two chapters on attitude. One is to concentrate on attitude, and then put your best attitude forward, which is an attitude of gratitude. I know that sounds kind of hackneyed, but I think I approach it with a little different thinking than what folks have been used to. But any attitude that does not have gratitude as its foundation is really moving in a direction of self-concern. The goal is goodness, not wholeness, or rather wholeness is not goodness. You know, better, best, this is all based on good. So we think we've got to be good in order to be better, in order to be best. Well, the whole focus of being your better self is really being your whole self. And in the next slide, I'm talking about your balanced self, which is the whole notion that we are both good and evil. We have propensities toward the good things, the empathetic things in life, and then we have the things toward, I don't want anybody in my life. I just want to be by myself. And or maybe you have a tendency toward doing things that aren't all that beneficial for yourself or others. Well, we're a mixture of those things, and we have to realize that at the nexus of where the good and the evil come together, that's our balanced self, and that's where our best, our better self can emerge in any situation. And I talk about the macro and the micro approach to your circumstances, and your micro approach is your initial reaction, and that gives cause to an emotional reaction that often exacerbates the problem and makes it worse and doesn't give you options beyond something, beyond what's immediately evident. But then the macro is where you can actually move beyond that and take into considerations a broader perspective. And that's the nexus of choice, moving back and forth between micro and macro when it comes to looking at your situation in life. You got to listen differently. There's a lot to listen. There's a lot of clatter in life. There's a den of daily living that you've got to filter out. But let's not throw the baby out with the bathwater, because there's things in other people's words to us that sometimes we don't listen to, or we fail to listen to. I've got a chapter in there on effective listening and how to bring out the best in others as well as yourself.
Well, fabulous. We're doing well for time and ideas. So I'm going to bring up the last slide. I'm showing about 2 minutes to, so is my computer. So we should start thinking about wrapping up. Ken, first of all, thank you for a very enlightening, thought-provoking, intriguing, stimulating 58 minutes so far. I think anybody listening to this will certainly enjoy the concepts and ideas and get them thinking about where they are, where they want to be, how they want to get there, and understanding that it's them becoming the best they can be, their better self, to get there. So overcoming limiting beliefs, all the things you talk about, you've got some great chapters that talk about that. And I think a lot of times we learn from stories and examples, and you had a couple of fabulous stories today, some very touching ones, and I appreciate that. And I know your book is going to be more of the same of those type of things. So let's talk about the last slide and how you want to wrap up.
Well, those are my websites. I call your attention specifically to that first one, Your Better Self Book, /BruceLeeSpecial.html. If you type that in to your web browser, you're going to come to a special page where there is a special price for the books. I have them that I need to let folks know that it's in the process of being published. So within 3 weeks, both the hardcover and the paperback will be available. And if they order now, I will certainly be able to, at these webinar prices, I will certainly send them when they become available to be sent. Also, by doing your order today, you'll be getting an MP3 of me reading the book for your listening pleasure while you're jogging, while you're in your car, however you want to listen to that. It's also something you can share with other people. And also a 30-day full access to my Better Than Your Best membership site, which is almost a $50 a month value at this stage. It's got all kinds of personal and organizational development articles, forums. You'll just have to go there. You can click in that website to go to the public portal to see and read more about it. But the e-book, I will let you know, the e-book is available to be downloaded immediately. So it's all ready to go.
Fabulous. And I'm sure a lot of those resources will make it worthwhile, make it the whole event worthwhile anyways. So some of those business resources. Ken, any final message before I wrap up our presentation?
Other than to express my appreciation, my attitude of gratitude toward you and your organization and the many people who have been listening, I certainly do appreciate that. And hopefully, as we proceed and progress through life, we'll all become our better selves.
Thank you very much. Ken, so on behalf of myself and everybody who's listened today, or viewed today and or will in the future, because this will be on my website as a replay, and it can be downloaded, uploaded anytime after as well as soon as they get it up there. But certainly the link you have now will allow you to do that too. Let me just sum up by saying thank you for being generous with your time and your examples, and for creating a book that certainly will help people figure out where they want to get. And one of the things that the overriding example I kept hearing when you're talking about was really about creating high expectations for you. And what I've learned over the years of training is that high accomplishment, high achievement always comes from high expectations. And that's really about you being your better self. So from the high expectation, certainly the achievement, certainly you get the results. And that's a key part of what your entire book is about. And all the examples point toward that. So with that, I'm going to sign everybody off. Wish everybody a great summer. And if you, for those of you that do get my newsletter, you will be getting one in about 3 weeks with the August one with some other webinars coming up. I certainly hope you log on for those. And in the meantime, please forward the link to this one to friends who might enjoy getting that little, as Zig Ziglar would say, a little check up from the neck up about becoming your better self. With that, Ken, again, thank you. This webinar is concluded. Have a great day, everybody.